Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hey, everyone. Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Today, I'm speaking with the wonderful Mark Bateman. Mark, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Saul.
That's good. Where are you in the world today, Mark, for those listening?
I'm actually based out of Malta, which for those of you that don't know where that is, it is somewhere between the southern tip of Italy and the northern tip of Africa in the Mediterranean.
Malta. I would imagine anyway, most people would, if they don't know where it is, they'd know like things like the Maltese cross and like words right. that sort of come from it. You obviously didn't hear Mark and my conversation before we started, but I was saying I actually had these sort of had a little bit of knowledge about Malta and its rich kind of history. But how did you actually come to be there, Mark?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it very much speaks to the core reason why you're running this podcast too. So we started the business that I'm currently the CEO of WeQual, and we started it during COVID. I'm somebody who loves the sun and blue skies. That's what feeds my soul. And I found myself in lockdown in London, and I'd had enough. And we were building a remote team because actually that was also the only option that we had when we started the business during COVID. And it's like, no. And in fact, actually my business partner, Katie, she said to me, Mark, I actually worry about the future of WeQual if you don't move to the sun. So literally, I finally made the decision. I think it was the Monday before Christmas Eve, just over 2 years ago. And by the Thursday, I'd left everything. And a week later, I'd rented a place here in Malta. Yeah.
And hence your new book, The Advantages of Vitamin D for Business.
Exactly. Do you know what that really is? That really should
sounds
be.
Like a joke. Sounds like a joke.
No, it sounds like a joke, but actually, you know, yeah. It probably transform everybody who's listening. Yeah, unless you're in it.
I reckon it just might. Yeah, I mean, you know, within reason. But it's true. Like it's true. It was certainly became more topical probably than it may have ever been before during COVID. Everyone's like, hey, you need vitamin D. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, because we're inside all the time. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of,
I tell you what, though, it's worse if you're in a country that has a lot of gray clouds is all I'm saying.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's no problem with that for the most part here in Australia, with the exception of recently when it's been super rainy in Queensland. I'm in Brisbane for people listening, but it's generally pretty hot. But, yeah, outside of our lovely weather location talk, for those people listening who don't know Mark, who haven't heard him talk and other things, haven't gone to his website, do give everyone just a bit of an overview about who you are and what you get up to, Mark?
Sure. So you can't tell because you're listening to this. I'm a man. I'm in my 50s. I'm a father of two grown-up daughters, one in the UK and one in New Zealand. I love traveling. By nature, I'm probably, you could argue, quite optimistic. I have seemingly, compared to everybody else I know, I seem to have quite a high attitude for risk, which is why I keep finding myself running businesses, I think. I've have a newfound love for tennis, which I've picked up in the last 2.5 years.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I like
a tiny bit of flavor.
I'm a racket sport person. I'm a squash player. But I was always obsessed as a kid with playing tennis. That was my, I guess, I don't think I ever said it to anyone. They say like, what are you going to be when you grow up, Saul? And I was, but in my mind, it was like, it's definitely going to be a pro tennis player. Because I was kind of obsessed in primary school with tennis, and then it somehow evolved into squash, and that's stayed that way ever since, and a few other things too with martial arts and other stuff. But wow. Squash is still like my main thing that I love.
So you got pretty good then. I mean, did you get like any kind of ranking level? Like, is it?
No, not in any like super good sense. I play comp squash twice a week. So like the grades are different now. And so I'm in, we have divisions now instead of grades. It used to be A, B, C, D, E, F when there was, but squash is, well, in Australia anyway, squash is a little bit of a shadow of how it used to be like in the heyday of squash. Still really popular, but not as big as like in the States or in Europe, in England. It's been, well, actually probably through all Great Britain and Europe, but especially in places like Egypt, which is interesting. They're crazy. It's like their national sport in Egypt. And so they're top squash players. But so is what's the tennis scene like in Malta?
Well, I've got to come back to the size of Malta, right? It's I think it's only like 20 miles long by maybe 13 miles wide. It's 600,000 people. It's like a pebble. It's like literally a pebble in the middle of the ocean. So
600,000 that's amazing.
But there's an amazing tennis club. It's the second largest parcel of land after the airport is a big sports club. And they have like 19 or so tennis courts plus paddle plus an 18-hole golf course. It's a rugby pitch. It's insane. Like, how is that even possible?
That's great.
So very blessed there, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess before we get into like other various topics in relation to what you do, can you tell me a little bit about like I didn't find when I was doing a little bit of research on you and on your website. Don't worry, Mark. I didn't dig anything untoward up. I was just there's finding out about. I was just really interested to find out how you started. Like, what was your beginning journey when you started in business? Like, what did you actually start that in as your first thing or your first like few things? What were you doing?
I think. Probably my entry into the business world is probably quite different from most. And so let me tell you sort of my backstory. My dad was a church minister and the kind of church which is the sort of more lively, charismatic type church. And from it, even at a very early age, the age of two, we moved from the UK to Belgium as missionaries, right? So from a very small boy, I could see my dad in a leadership position. And a challenging leadership position. We used to have lots and lots of other church leaders come and visit our home and speak in the church. And we would go and visit other church leaders in their homes. And without even realizing it, as a really small boy, I was studying leadership because I wanted my dad to succeed. And I could see what he was doing really, really well. And I could see what he wasn't doing so well. And I had kind of, you know, front row seats, so to speak. I'm the oldest son. I have four sisters. And so actually at my early part of my career, if I say it like that, I thought that I'd been called to go into the church. So I found myself after doing a computer science degree, working in IT, which, in the 90s and early noughties, was a great place to be. But I thought that my future was in the church. And, how it actually transpired is it didn't quite work out as I thought it might in the context of church. And I found myself actually starting a business. So I initially went contracting. So I'd had a really nice high paid job working for a big insurance company in the UK. And I got approached by British Telecom, the big telecoms provider in the UK, to go contracting. And contracting basically tripled my money overnight because it was an hourly rate. There was no employment contract. And I've always been somebody who is a little bit, how am I explaining myself? A little bit different in the sense that I can't just sit at a desk and do whatever you want me to do from now till the rest of eternity. So I started looking for other contracts. I started running parallel contracts. Then I actually decided to properly start a business and employ people, take on offices. I then grew a business really without knowing what I was doing, to be fair, from a sales, marketing, employment law.
Sounds pretty familiar.
Legal, finance, exactly right. It's the journey that any first time entrepreneur goes through. Mm. How to interview people, how to manage people, how to drive engagement, et cetera. So grew a business about 45 people, got to 2007-8. We'd done really well. Financial services was a really big sector for us. We're running really big contracts with the big global banks, and the global financial crash happened, and it coincided with some challenges in my personal life, and so I ended up selling the business 2011, and in that period kind of went through a bit of a transformation, in that I did a lot of personal therapy. I did a master's in leadership coaching and mentoring. I studied psychotherapy, and came back really to my, what I would say is my core. I actually call it my professional purpose, which is to enable leaders to achieve meaningful purpose. And really coming back to that essence of, you could say, wanting my dad to be a better leader, wanting him to succeed. And so my professional purpose is about helping leaders achieve meaningful purpose. And that's what I've been doing since.
That's great. It's interesting. I was just having a conversation with a friend recently who's been going through a range of different, personal and business kind of challenges. And she was talking about doing different studies and skilling up. She's always had an interest in psychology and, neuromarketing, being a sort of a marketer, but she was speaking, and I'm saying this because I'm wondering if it's like a similar reason why then you ended up doing those various sort of studies that ended up being where you are now, because it was also just very helpful to you because, maybe you wanted to sort of understand yourself, because that's what she was talking about. And so, it makes a lot of it. Seems to be like a common thread that I've heard, and maybe I've done it in a different sort of way too. Like, you want to understand, you're going through something, and you go, and if you're sort of the sort of person who wants to understand why something happened, right, and you want to, not have it happen again, or you want to even just understand it and just go, like, I don't really get it. Like, I just want to get across it. And then it ends up being a thing, and all of a sudden, you go down this other path. Is that like something that you, was why you did it, or like a part of it?
There's a very long answer to that one. I'm trying to think of the short one. I think probably for most people, you reach a point in your life where, for example, if we talk about midlife crisis, right? What is a midlife crisis? A midlife crisis is where, this is how I would define it, you have a plan. It's almost like you have a map of how life should be. Mm. And you'd be working towards that map through your teens, is where you're still developing your map. Then in your 20s, 30s, maybe even into your 40s. And then suddenly you realize that the map that I have doesn't fit my reality. And woof, like, suddenly I don't know who am I? Where am I supposed to be going? What's the point of life? Is there more to life, etc. And so we have to basically redefine or rip up the existing map and create a new one, because the reality of the world is different from what we thought it was. Mm. Now, I was married through this process, or as a result of this process, we ended up getting divorced. That's obviously a painful process for anybody to go through. I went through a period of burnout myself at the same point in time. And so originally, I went into therapy to save the marriage, and going through that process. And, we both were very committed to making the marriage work, and going through that process and really being forced from a personal perspective, from my perspective, who am I? What is causing those repeating behaviors? Where am I not free? There's a Bible verse which says, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Mm. And regardless of whether you're a believer or not, that is a very, very powerful, because ultimately, if we see the truth of something, you can't unsee it. Mm. And from my journey, my experience is going through therapy, and doing the coaching course, it was all deeply reflective. And when you see something about yourself, you might go, oh God, no, I don't like that. can we ignore that? Can we change that? You know, it might be something about your past. It might be something about your present. Mm-hmm. But actually, I generally believe if we come back to the topic of leadership, it still applies. It's why feedback is so important, right? What is it that we're doing well and what's stopping us? And what's stopping us, very often we can try and hide away from. We don't really want to see. It can be a difficult subject, a difficult topic. We maybe are engaged in a type of behavior that we know is not serving us, but we don't really want to go to the root of why we're doing it. And so if you come to that aspect of, you know, the truth and the truth will set you free, it can be a very painful process to see, to know the truth. You know, what's at the core of who you are? Why are you doing what you do?
Is there a kind of interesting, you know, I guess an unwanted advantage that you end up sort of having, like you have the, and I say unwanted advantage because you didn't, because nobody ever wants to go through those things. I mean, that would be ridiculous, but you go through them anyway and they happen. But the then advantage, like then obviously for yourself is great at some future point when you come to some realization or understanding, but the point at which then that is able to help other people too, because the more I guess I sort of speak to a lot of people who are leadership coaches or who are leaders and different things, and I sort of see, it's interesting because I like seeing patterns in things. I think that's just the design in me, or just how I am. I feel like I'm pretty good at seeing these repeating patterns. And the more, and interestingly, it's come with doing the podcast more, because I get to have these kind of interesting long conversations that I would usually not even have with maybe people that I know pretty well. You know, so I have these conversations and I see these repeating things, which to me, I'm sort of trying to think of the right words to say it. It's sort of something like this, and I'm saying it too because there's similar stories. People go through something hard. They come out the other end. They're kind of, without sounding too much like a cliche, they're kind of reborn in some new way, a new version of themselves. Mm-hmm. And they have this mix of, you know, the intellect that they've always had, but with this different sort of strong level of passion about something. You know, it's like what, you know, you might have when you're talking to people about leadership and business. And it's this point at which it sort of passion meets a skill set you've already got. And, you know, like a bunch of stuff, because, you know, you can't just have passion alone. You've got to have the skills to back it up to some extent. But that point at which those two mix, like this sort of chemical or something, I find that really interesting because that's like the part that's hard to quantify, but people generally know it when they see it. Like if you want to call it, what would you call it? Is there like a name for it that you can think of? But it's like this point where people who then you're working with, or if you're speaking, it's why somebody then responds to you, because, you know, not anyone could just get up on a stage or talk to a group of people about a certain thing and have some impact. It doesn't really work like that. You know, you can't just like, but it's this sort of impact that comes from having to go through.
I mean, you're almost talking about a personal epiphany, I guess.
Perhaps. Yeah. I mean, it's the thing that you realize about yourself, but I guess what I'm also talking about is this, I see these repeating patterns in people who are really great and have this impact on other people. And the factor that always seems to be tied into it is that that person has gone through some fire. They've come out the other end and they're different. And that mix then between the skills they already had and this newfound self or set of realizations is super powerful. I find that really interesting.
Yeah. For me, this is the very core, actually, the reason why I wrote the book, Disruptive Leadership And you've just mentioned the word fire, right? So the title of the book is Disruptive Leadership, Using Fire to Drive Purposeful Change. Mm. And fire is really interesting. And before I'd even penned my first word about the book, there was the subject of fire. And very often fire can be a refining, right? Which is, I think, what you're talking about there, is that, you know, if you take a lump of rock that's got some gold in it and you put enough heat around it, so you put it in a hot enough fire, you'd be able to separate out the gold from the dross. And I think what happens if either we whether we want it or not, actually, we reach these moments in our lives where the dross needs to separate from the gold.
Mm.
And we can resist it or we can embrace it. But the end product of going through that process is that what we end up with in terms of who we are is a purer version of ourselves, which is going to be more powerful. It's going to be more effective. It's going to be more true to who we are, because the dross is unwanted. The dross is the the black and gray.
The slag.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah. It's like the slag.
It's not even worthless in that sense. It's actually it actually inhibits who we are.
Yeah. I was actually strangely it's quite funny because I was literally watching a video on YouTube when I went down one of those ridiculous YouTube sort of rabbit holes, and I ended up they're great. Some of them aren't great, but this one I went down ended up being about smelting stuff, and it was about gold. And I saw this video that was about how they make gold. No, oh man, I definitely want to find out how they make gold. And it was interesting, and they were showing all this sort of slag and what they had to do. And so I it's sort of funny timing with that, but we're talking about fire too. This one thing, relate very strongly to that, because one thing that I brought up in a few, I think I've talked about to some other people on the podcast too, but it's because it seems like a really great metaphor to me. It's this thing that I've talked about at home previously with my wife about when, you know, things have been hard and you end up sort of having, especially if you have an argument or something extreme happens, and it seems like what happens when you have a bushfire. You know, in Australia we have bushfires, and they're, you know, no worse necessarily than other fires, but these big grass fires, and the bushfire comes through and it lays everything to waste, but then the nutrients that come from the ash that goes into the ground is so beneficial for new growth. And I've always had that as a metaphor that I've always thought, wow, it was really great. And we've talked about it in the past. But recently, we got this property. We actually had a bushfire on the property. Mm. Had a bushfire. And the fires, they backburned. So I saw it firsthand. And what I saw, like having this image in my head and then seeing it in real life, was amazing. It was like a charred, you know, our house was okay, but it was all just black. And I was like, whoa, that's incredible. I can actually see the land now. There was like no grass anywhere. And within a week, from being like a barren apocalyptic wasteland, it went to literally a lush English countryside. And I was like, I cannot believe that. But within a day after it, even I was walking around and saw these tiny little bits of something or other, these little tiny little growths, and they were everywhere. And it was only when I looked carefully, and I just that idea of that maybe you can sort of speak to as well, because I'd like to talk more about, you know, than the book and that idea of fire, that idea of what elements of the destruction or the perceived destruction end up being the fuel or the food for the next stage of growth, because it always seems like a really wonderful, there's this sort of chaos, and then this incredible new growth that is actually needed comes out of it.
Through the when I was studying psychotherapy, there's a guy called Carl Rogers who pretty much turned the head of psychology at the time on its head, because prior to that you had Carl Jung and others like him that were perceived as the experts. They would wear, they would don the white lab coats. You would lie down on a couch, settee, sofa, you know, and they would proceed to tell you what's wrong with you. Carl Rogers came along and said, no, 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 the expert in your life is you, right? You are the expert in your life. Nobody else can ever tell you what you should be doing in your life because you are the expert. And he described some conditions that we need to thrive. And actually the ultimate aspect of thriving is this term actualization, right? And actualization ultimately means becoming the best that we can be. So an acorn to actualize becomes a big oak tree, right? So every living organism seeks to actualize. And all of us have this remarkable propensity, especially as human beings, to be able to go through these kinds of potential travesties, right? Things that feel like they're designed to kill us, to put us down. And yet through those processes, through those journeys, you know, the most remarkable people on the planet typically are those ones that have endured the most. Why is that? You know? Why is that?
Perseverance. I'm just some guy like we all are, just trying to figure stuff out. But like, I sort of see these.
I think we all are, regardless. Yeah, all, you know, just every single trying, one of us.
Yeah, but like you do at certain points. Like now, I feel like I'm way more across certain things. Like I'm no expert, that's for sure. But I do feel like I'm way more across things than I used to be. And one of them is like, it doesn't mean I'm an expert either, but at least I know it, which is like a good first step. It's like that, you know, actualization's about how, like, you know, good ways to do things in little chunks, you know, doing it piece by piece and breaking it down and things like that, which, I mean, it's not rocket science, but, you know, maybe it means I'm a slow learner. I probably am, you know, but all these like sorts of things, I imagine these, you know, things you were talking about too. Do you see them being sort of played out when you're with a group of, you know, leaders, business owners, groups of people, and everyone's talking? Do you sort of have a sense? You obviously, you know, it helps the more time you spend with people, but do you see those like sorts of things?
So to give a little bit more context to what I do now. So, there's kind of two parts to me, if you like. There's Mark, you could say Mark the coach, which is this deep focus on wanting to support leaders to achieve meaningful purpose. And I'm going to keep coming back to that meaningful purpose piece, because when you talk about that wildfire, for example, that blows through, well, it doesn't really blow through, it burns through, right? Then you get those little seeds that immediately start sprouting, because that's their purpose. That's what they're designed to do. That's what's in their most core being, is I need to grow. I need to grow towards the light. I need to take nutrients. I want to expand and to thrive, right? So for me, purpose is a really key starting point. The second part of me is as the CEO of WeQual. Now, WeQual is a business that exists to drive gender equality at the top of the world's largest companies. To date, we've been working with circa 350 big global brands, and it is all about really helping to drive those organizations to increase gender representation. I get more towards that 50-50 mark. And it's worth saying, you know, why? Well, you could argue from a moral or ethical perspective, but actually it creates better business outcomes as well. So those organizations that increase diversity, increase gender representation towards that 50-50 outperform those companies that don't. For me, that's enough. But actually, secondly, those companies are better for the planet as well. So I'm kind of split into two, right? I'm the CEO with all of the responsibilities and challenges and joys that brings, but also I'm kind of Mark the coach, right? And when you're talking to anybody, it doesn't matter whether it's the CEO of the world's biggest company or whether you're talking to a 15-year-old girl, right? We're all driven. We're all human, number one. Every single one of us is human. Like we all struggle. We all get anxious. We all get lost. We all struggle sleeping at times. We're all superhuman, no matter who we are. When I say superhuman, I mean we are just utterly human, right? And so you know, when we're talking about this epiphany or the transformation or the fire or refinement or going through something that is difficult or hard, you know, where I come from, my perspective, my philosophy is, okay, but what is it you're put on this planet to do? Because typically when you go through something that's difficult or challenging, it's refining you in some way. It's literally moving the slag, the dross, the unwanted bits, which is painful. There's no other word for it. It's painful.
Right? Tell me about it. Yeah, 100%.
You know, the moment we run into a difficulty, it's not how we want it to be. And so what do we do in that moment? You know, do we get upset? Do we get frustrated? Do we get angry? Do we get depressed? And all of those, by the way, are fine, right? They're all normal human responses to us not getting what we want. Okay, but it's not changing. So maybe the only thing that needs to change is me. What is it inside of me? How can I become more resilient? How can I let go of actually what's not really important? How can I build better relationships? How can I be more authentic? How can I have clearer clarity of thinking? How can I ensure that the things that I'm pursuing or chasing are actually true to me rather than maybe somebody's idea of what I should be doing? So there's all these different things, stuff, mess that as human beings, we are constantly trying to figure out. And I think some human beings have I'm almost jealous of those human beings that seemingly are very happy doing 9 to 5, in a kind of job where there's little challenge, and they go home and they've got their home, and it's like nothing really changes over 40 years, right? I don't know what it's like to have that life. That is so alien to me, because I would be bored after 2 days. You know, if I would walk out the job, and that's not to criticize anybody else, that's just not who I am. So but actually in that process, it also causes its own potential turmoil, right? It's challenging. So the subject of, you know, really ultimately for me, for those of us who find ourselves either trying to grow a business, start a business, grow a business, we have responsibility for other people, ensuring that we are quality leaders ultimately. And what does that mean? Well, it means that we're very aware. It means that we're on our own development process. We recognize the impact that we have on others, and we understand why we're doing it, which comes back to that sense of purpose.
And does purpose, because thinking about the way you're talking about purpose, then to me, you know, seems like, because I'll often, when I can't think of the right word, I'll think of some visual thing, you know, as like a designer. Not because I'm a designer, it's just because I'm me, you know. But I'll just think of some visual. I'll go like, you know. And so first thing I thought of then is having a purpose is like, you know, you've got just the one sort of main path, and you've got all the little things kind of off the edge of it, and it makes it, you know, it might not make it easier, but it then simplifies when you got a primary sort of purpose, you know, leading to multiple goals. It sort of simplifies things, as opposed to, no, it's sort of then obviously linked to probably goal setting too, right? You know, ultimately.
Well, it helps in decision making for starters, right? So, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Saul. You know, are you able to define what your own, let's talk about professionally, what your professional sense of purpose is? What is the thing you are ultimately trying to achieve?
Well, it's a little bit different now than if you had asked me that maybe pre-COVID. But we've got without going into the details, the way that I guess my wife and I view our lives and business now are very, very, very intertwined in a really different way than they used to be, because we've got a range of other goals with a property that we've got, a different lifestyle that we want to lead. That's very, probably the most specific about anything that we've probably ever been. that's very specific. We've had this, well, we probably had this vision forever, but we've been able to put it in into play and financial things. So, yes, in the sense that we've got a very strong plan for an evolution. It's more about our future, I guess, about how to get from the current to the future and how that works in with our lifestyle.
Right. So this is why I kind of separate out personal sense of personal purpose, like personal goals, personal objectives versus professional. So, because if I just say, oh, you know, my sole purpose in life is to help leaders achieve meaningful purpose. God, I mean, that sounds, A, it sounds like a robot, and B, it probably means I'm not that interesting because all I will ever do is talk to you about leadership, right? So that's why it's interesting for me to separate out the professional element. And what that means is everything I do professionally, right, from a work, if I can say that perspective, though often there is a blend between the two, but is I want to ensure that I'm having an impact by working with leaders, helping them to achieve what they're supposed to be achieving. So, you know, why are you doing this podcast? Why have you done all of these podcasts? What's your ultimate goal in doing those?
Well, the podcast one is actually quite simple, which is originally, I guess at the very nexus of it, it was like, oh, maybe we'll do a podcast because it'll be good for marketing with the business. And that was very simple right at the start, like a lot of people, right? But then very, very quickly, I mean, I listened to a lot of podcasts too. And the thing that then drove the primary reason why I do the podcast, and it's very simple, and it's almost not in some ways for the real core reason why I do it, not linked to the business in some ways, is that I listen to podcasts. I get a lot out of them. I like listening to it. So I thought, if I'm going to do it, and if I'm going to do it long term, I want to make sure that I'm doing it for as sort of honest a reason for myself as I can have, which is really like at the heart of it, it's just to actually, I like hearing other people's stories, really enjoy it. And I like, you know, having a platform, you know, in our little, I mean, a modest way to be able to help people share their stories. Part of it's like a selfish reason because I like hearing it. And then I like being able to share because I find it really fascinating. And I feel that every time I do it, I get really energized. And that if it's going to sort of grow and, you know, and become something that's actually genuinely not really a specific goal, because I like doing it and I feel that's important for it to ultimately, if it was to be something, because if people are going to listen to it, because I reflect on why I listen to podcasts, and why I listen to podcasts isn't just, you know, for any particular reason. I might listen because of a certain topic, but it's mainly because of then the conversation, and you're like a fly on the wall, and you're listening to two people that you know often, even though you don't know them. And I like that. I think that's I think that's kind of important. And it's why podcasts are obviously very popular.
But I would say, and I don't know anything about your history or background, but I would say there's a reason why you started the podcast. These are some of the benefits, almost surprising benefits that you're getting. I actually really enjoy this. I like hearing the authenticity. I'm learning. I'm getting all these diverse perspectives. It's the kind of thing I want to hear, right? They're all like some of the reasons, but you know, without knowing you, and I really don't know, you know, if is it a marketing design agency, marketing, like what's your background in terms of?
I'm still a full service agencies, but it's with branding, websites, apps. But
so I would suggest then that this actually is all part of your mission, because if there's a reason why you've been drawn to marketing, there's a reason that you want to tell people stories. There's a reason that you want them to position themselves on the world stage in some way. There is some deeper reason. And I'm conscious here, Saul, that we,
but
quite personal, but.
Oh, no. That's to delve deeper into that, because my wife and I trained as illustrators. So our core you know, sort of self is probably sort of pretty evenly spread between artist, illustrator, and designer, marketing person. Like we've mm-hmm. both got a really equal love for creative things and then also how to build things. So, but the sort of the illustration storytelling part of it is really, if I was going to say probably what, if I had to say a primary important thing that I like doing, and it seems to come through everything in some form, and that's sort of storytelling. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, being able to, if it's to design and illustrate a children's book, I mean, which we do too. Like that's probably a core element, I would say. So I guess
And what I would be really interested in is understanding, I don't know whether this is the right context or time or what have you, but there is, for me, in all my work with hundreds and hundreds, thousands even of one-on-one conversations, is very often we're unaware of actually what's driving us, why we end up doing what we're doing. Mm. We think we end up doing something kind of out of chance or by mistake. And I'm talking to, you know, C-suite of big global companies, you know, say a CFO, and they'll say, I just got here by chance. No, you didn't. You don't become the CFO of a big global listed company by chance, in the same way as you don't start a business by chance. You don't start a podcast by chance, mm. right? There is a, in the same way as you talked about that wildfire running through, and then that little seed still spurts up. It still grows. It still has that core aspect to itself that it wants to grow in a certain way, right? A pear tree can only mm. ever be a pear tree. A lemon tree can only ever be a lemon tree. A grapevine can only ever be a grapevine, because that's what they're supposed, I use the word supposed, but that's how they actualize, right? That's their sense of personal purpose. Mm. So there is there will be a deeper underlying reason why you love storytelling. Mm. Why is that important to you? What is it ultimately you're trying to achieve through that storytelling? And very often, by the way, it comes back to childhood as well, as a by the by. And I think that can be really helpful to understand, because it can kind of give us, you know, some people have called it the North Star, right? It's the thing that we know that we want to pursue. And almost anything outside of that is potentially a waste. And the reason why I say that is, imagine a banana tree trying to be an apple tree.
Mm.
Right. And it expends all of its energy trying to grow apples. It's going to be the most depressed, miserable, angry, frustrated, demotivated, because it can't. It just can't do it. So far better learning the truth and going, actually, no, you know what? I'm a banana tree, and bananas are good. Whereas if I have a belief that bananas are bad, but that's kind of, do you understand? It's like understanding why we're here on this earth. What we have, if we're fortunate, we have 80, 90, maybe even 100 and something years. If we're, you know, if you listen to all the longevity health span people right now. So gosh, we think that's a long time when we're small. I'm 55 right now. And like, you start counting down instead of counting up, right? You become more and more aware of your humanity. Our time here is fixed. So what do I want my impact to be, right? What do I want my legacy to be? And do I understand why I am who I am? What is important to me? What drives me? And then for me, that comes back to that sense of purpose. And I definitely do talk about this in the book, because
I wonder, like I was just thinking about that too. Do you find that people, when you're talking about purpose, because I very strongly relate to that. I think it's really important. But do people, or at least some people, when you're talking about that, do they think that that's like the province of like people who, like driven people or people who've it's like Elon Musk or like somebody who wants to make a difference. Like, I don't want to make a difference. You know, that doesn't apply to me.
Well, number one, everybody wants to make a difference. Mm. Everybody. If you're a mum at home, I guarantee you right now, if you're a healthy mum, right, you are absolutely driven to create a safe home and a place where your children can thrive. Right? You want to be a mom. You're going to protect them. You're going to put them first. You're going to self-sacrifice. You're going to wake up at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 a.m. in the morning. Dad's two, but you know, if we're just talking about a mom there, who is not at work, maybe who is maybe struggling with you know, depression and you know, really finding tough life. You know, the absolute opposite of how you might perceive an Elon Musk. I guarantee you right now, she's driven to ensure that her children are okay. So all of us, regardless of who we are, we want to have a positive impact. All of us, you know, you can get a group of 100 managers in a room and you can say to them, okay, tell me, right? Or write down, what is it you want to do? What, tell me the outcome of what you want to achieve. Oh, well, and whatever, it always boils down to impact. Always. We want to make a difference. All of us do. Otherwise, kind of, what's the point, right? You want to make a difference through this podcast. You want to help people tell their stories. Why? Because you want to help them. And also it helps you, but there is that positive impact aspect.
Yeah.
And so,
I guess what I'm sort of trying to get at was that do like a lot of people then just, even if you might, you know, they end up realizing it when they're talking through it with you or at some point, but do like a lot of people, even if they obviously do, because people do, but do they just not realize it or they don't think they have one, even if they do? Like, is that so, something that you've come across and people are, oh, that's not really, like, even though they're
continuously,
obviously.
Continuously. Mm. Yeah. Continuously. Most people that I talk to don't know why they're doing what they're doing. Mm. And I tell you what, the moment they see it, it's that truth piece again, right? You'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. Like the moment they see, oh my God, like, I've never seen that before. And then suddenly you can see almost like the jigsaw pieces falling into place.
Yeah.
And it is like a personal moment of epiphany.
Yeah.
Like I thought I was doing just by chance. I thought I was doing this because of X, Y, or Z. And then they see the core reason. They're able to connect it to something, for example, about both their childhood, their nature, their nurture. They go, it's like a light bulb being turned on in that moment. Yeah. And it can happen surprise. When you see it, you see it and you can't unsee it. It's a moment in time, right? It's bam, there it is. Okay. Oof. Now kind of everything makes sense. Now I understand more of who I am and it helps us to remove the gold from the dross again, right? I thought I was supposed to be doing all this, excuse the language, but shit, right? All this stuff around the edge that isn't core to who I am. I'm trying to be an apple tree. Oh, a banana tree. Why am I expending so much effort and energy trying to be something that I'm not? Oof. And I understand now. I'm a banana tree. I can produce bananas.
Wouldn't it be funny to, at some point, scientists actually realize they come across an actual banana tree and there's some sort of evidence to show that some of them do actually try to be other sorts of trees. At some point, I was like, breaking news, everybody. Like, breaking news. And everyone was like, what's going on? The world's crazy. And there, but there's like,
you know what? No,
it's been scientifically proven.
I'll tell you why it's not possible. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I don't know the language, but the genetic composition, there is nothing in a banana tree's, dare I say, genes, cells.
So that's not very equitable, Mark.
I'm kidding. I know, but even that is just a nonsensical statement. So, you know, like, we can't be who we're not supposed to be.
Yeah, I know.
I know you're going to laugh at my expense. Don't you worry.
No, I'm it's not at your expense. It's at the concept of.
Yeah, but the truth is, so many of us expend so much energy trying to succeed because we believe that's what's expected from us by those that sit outside of us.
Mm.
And if we're not truly aware of our own personal sense of purpose, what brings us joy, where we find a sense of fulfillment, it's like we're trying to play to somebody else's tune. I'm going to use an example. I've not used this question for a little while now, but I'm coaching somebody. I'll say to them, right, imagine, imagine you go to a theater, right? And there's hundreds of seats. There's a stage. There's a curtain. There's lights. And on the stage, there's lots of people. But this is now the stage of your life, right? We are going to be watching your life. Tell me, where are you in that theater?
At the moment, I'm in the audience watching them.
That's actually a common response. Or yeah. I'm off to the side. I'm hiding. I'm behind the curtain.
I'm ultimately watching it from afar.
Right. Yeah. And what would it look like for you to be the leading actor in your own life? You're right front and center. The spotlight is on you. This is about your life now. And you're the one, and you're happy to be in the light. You're happy to be playing the fullness of why you are supposed to be here.
Mm.
And everybody's watching you, and you don't feel shy because you're confident in who you are and your purpose for being there.
Do you think a part of people's response to that, and I guess my response there too straight away, was their automatic visualization of how they usually see their life anyway, which is they aren't, except in dreams, I suppose, where you kind of might see yourself, but generally in life, you don't see yourself. You're looking at things. So is that maybe more reflective of just how they're used to viewing the world is like through their eyes, but they're not looking at seeing themselves as like a piece of augmented reality in the scene. It's just like looking at the scene. Do you think like maybe it's how they're used to viewing things, or because they
it might be, but for me, if we come back to the aspect of business as well, I mean, this is true in our personal lives, because what plays out in our personal lives plays out in our work life, right? Around 2008-09, I was in therapy, and I can remember exactly where I was. I was in my back garden. I believe the sun was actually shining, this being the UK. It was a surprise. And I was kind of – I absolutely work in allergies as well, right? So I saw a speeding train in my mind's eye. There's a train. It's going very quickly. There's multiple carriages. You've got the engine on the front and multiple carriages. I'm in and this was a metaphor for my life now. I'm in carriage 7, but I'm locked in the toilet and I can't see out the window because it's marbled out. So this is my life, right? And I'm in carriage number 7. I'm locked in the toilet and I can't even see out the window. Mm-hmm. And it's okay, this is exactly how my life feels right now. I am not in charge of my life. I am not at the front. I'm not setting my direction. I'm trying to fulfill. I'm trying to do everything, the stuff around the edge, but it's not core to who I am. And so that was about my journey. How do I get out of that little toilet, unlock the door, walk all the way to the front, sit in the driver's seat? What does that look like?
And the train's going fast too. It's also going.
And the train's going fast. It feels out of control, right? Because you're in. You're not driving it. And so many of us feel like that. And in the context of leadership, if we find ourselves, and I was the CEO of a company at this point, remember, right? So I'm a leader, running the company, but this is my personal life. And how does that impact my leadership impact? How does that impact the thing that I'm trying to do, the success I'm trying to drive, the difference I'm trying to make? Gosh, well, there's a lot of dross in that picture. There's a lot of stuff that is not helping me. I have really a wrong perspective of myself. I am making the wrong decisions because I find myself in the toilet on the 7th carriage and I can't even see out the window. There's some drastic change needed here. And that process was not easy, not straightforward. But actually, I believe that is absolutely core to effective leadership, to driving the impact, to making the change, to making the difference that we want to seek, that we want to drive throughout our lifetimes.
You also, I was reading, I think it was on your website, you were talking about the quality of a entrepreneur, business owner, sort of needing a delusional confidence.
A delusional self-confidence.
When I read that, I was like, I really want to hear from Mark, like a expanded view of that. Cause I thought it was a great phrase. It was sort of had this element of havoc to it, but I generally know what it means. But what
this is my fifth business. And this one I'm actually running with my business partner, Katie, who came up with the original idea for WeQual. And, the number of scars that I have from businesses. I think for anybody to think that they can create a business from nothing, which ultimately is what an entrepreneur does, right? You create something from nothing. That is the definition of an entrepreneur. I'm sorry, who do you think you are again? Right? And the fact that you think that you can build a product or a service, the fact that you think you can go and find people to sell that product or service to, the fact that they're willing to give you money to do it, the fact that you can go and attract people and build the right systems and process and build a business and endure the biggest of hardships. It's difficult to start and grow a business. It will take absolutely everything and more. And the reason why burnout is also a topic in my book is I have burnt out in the past. I always feel like I'm on the edge of burnout because we're working long hours. We're bootstrapping this business, so we don't have external funding. We're working globally. We're trying to change, you know, gender within the world's largest companies. That's who would try and do that? Okay. Well, obviously you are delusional.
You, Mark.
Well, me and Katie, right? We both have the same attitude towards risk. I absolutely have to have delusional self-confidence.
Is an element of that also related to faith? Like, and I'm not necessarily speaking about religious faith, but that's
me. I mean, I'm not in the church anymore. Really, it's that confidence piece, right? And confidence shows up in a multiplicity of different ways, right? We can have confidence in one arena and not in another. To be a self-entrepreneur, I mean, the thing that drives successful entrepreneurs, drive is absolutely key. You talked earlier on, you know, the difference, you know, about purpose and impact, but the ones that go on to get to the very top have just extraordinary drive. And typically they have extraordinary drive because they've had to overcome something quite major in their early childhood. It's like it puts something in them that you can't get unless you go through that hardship. You know, imagine that wildfire again, right? As a small child, all it'll be either over many years or a few one-off events that just cause you to go, right, okay, I'm going to do something different. And I don't care how difficult it is. I don't care how impossible it is. And this is, you know, so I'm going to switch slightly now. So in the book, I use the analogy of fire as a metaphor for either both starting, growing, and protecting a business. Imagine the business is a fire now. Right. If you're starting a business, imagine that you're starting a fire. Well, what do you need to start a fire? Well, a fire has three main elements: heat, fuel, oxygen. Okay. So you remove any one of those, you don't have a fire. You have those three in place at the right time, the right temperature, you have a fire. So if I'm wanting to start a business, I have to have the right amount of heat. I have to have the right type of fuel and I have to have the right amount of oxygen. Okay, how does that apply to a business startup? Well, what is the heat? I've defined heat as leadership, purpose in action, i.e. there's a difference I want to make, right? I want to help business owners to tell their stories because I want to help them become more successful. And I'm really driven by it, by the way. I use storytelling and I use illustrations and I'm willing to start a podcast and I want to build an agency because I want to help others tell their stories and be successful. I will die trying it, Saul. I will die trying it. You break me in half, that's what I'm going to bleed. I will always want to help other people tell their stories, right? I'm ad-libbing slightly on your behalf here, but you get the idea, right? So it's just in me. Whether I'm aware of it or not, whether I know why I'm doing it or not, it's just in me. I will die doing this thing. For me, that is absolutely aligned to our core purpose. So I want to go and do it. Okay. Well, Have you got the money? No. Do you have a network? No. But it doesn't matter because I'm going to go and do it. So you start doing it. And in doing it, you're challenging the status quo because you have to get, you have to build something from nothing. Mm. As you start doing it, physics shows us that you start expending energy over time in the pursuit of your purpose generates heat. There's your first component required.
Mm.
Being really clear about what you're doing, expending energy in the pursuit of it, heat. What's your fuel? Well, your fuel is people. Great, talented people that you want to draw to your cause and ultimately money. You're going to need some money as well. So they're the resources that you need. That's the fuel for your fire. And the oxygen is your customers, your market. Those ultimately you're trying to impact in some way. Feeding so as you set about starting your business, these are the three core components. How do you now start to grow your fire? Quality leadership. Right. Making sure you have the right type of heat, that the heat is pure. The heat is clean. Right. You continue attracting more fuel. You understand how to engage your team. You understand how to use money and then oxygen. And now you're talking about brand. You're talking about marketing. You're talking about the stories that you're telling, and sales. Okay. That's how I grow. How do I protect it? Well, I need to make sure that no competitor steals my fuel. Or my oxygen. I need to watch out for headwinds. I need to make sure that the oxygen, which you could see almost like as a wind, if the wind changes direction, COVID happens. If Russia invades Ukraine, suddenly, bam, right? I can't run my business anymore. Airbnb, it was doing great. Thank you very much until COVID struck, right? And WeWork, right? That huge global organization that allowed offices. Well, they've gone bust now for multiple reasons, but primary because of COVID. So it took their oxygen away. And through that whole process, for me, it's about quality leadership. Who are you as the leader inside that organization? Because the heat part, you want to be removing the dross all of the time and getting more and more purity, that gold part, because you want to ensure that the impact that you're leaving is positive and not negative. And I use the example, you use the example of a wildfire before. I use it actually in a slightly different context, which is, as a business, you don't want to be a wildfire because a wildfire is destructive. It maims and kills and destroys. It doesn't, it's not something you can control. So you have opportunistic leaders who are driven by ego, right? There's a lot of dross in there. They're driven by ego, status, power, money. They don't care about people and they'll take advantage of a situation where there's a wildfire or a flash fire. You know, you're one of these businesses that starts, does really well, they become the darling of Wall Street and then collapses just as quickly. Right. That's not positive impact. So how do we ensure that the fire that we build, the legacy that we leave is positive? It's all about who we are as quality leaders, which for me is purpose, values, and then as an aspect of accountability to it.
If you were going to, there's a lot of fantastic, metaphors there. I really like them. And, have you ever thought of where smoke would fit into that picture? I'm asking that too, because at our property, I just visually thinking about fire, we're actually burning, we had a big drum and we're burning off a whole lot of stuff. There's a lot of junk and dead wood and stuff, and the fire was quite safely inside. It was contained, but at one point, like, because we've been doing it so often, you get to like have this really strong sense of the nuances of what burns well and what doesn't burn well, and all the different fuel. And there's certain sorts of things that I know now from doing it a lot, like some of these things automatically, the fire's still going, but all this smoke initially, this huge and different sorts of smoke go. And it was interesting because I know from, probably from Hollywood, I'm sure, or some silly source that fire travels through smoke. But I actually saw that happen, which was really interesting. I actually saw it start to travel through smoke. And I was thinking about that. And then when we're talking about this, I thought, I wonder if Mark has, in this like series of metaphors, thought of where smoke fits in, or if he hasn't. I'll put you on the spot.
And you can, you are.
Yeah, you can figure it out. You can figure it out.
Thanks. I think there's two aspects to smoke. I'm very much thinking on my feet here. often you can get smoke even without there really properly being a fire, you know, that kind of smoldering, not quite got going.
Yeah.
Feels messy.
It feels dirty.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And actually, as you were describing that, that's really what was coming to my mind. And it is dirty. And that was coming to my mind. It's like, again, no, I haven't looked at this, but if you burn rubber tires, that's not good. Right. You know, that black smoke. Not black smoke. That's also toxic.
Toxic, right? Yeah.
It's toxic. It's petrochemical based. It's not good. So actually the thing that came to my mind, rightly or wrongly, as you were speaking, was, and I've got to be careful with this metaphor now in terms of the fire piece. We want to attract incredible people to us. And, you know, if we burn gas, for example, is there smoke at that? Well, of course there is a byproduct and you wouldn't want to breathe it in, but there isn't that big billowing black smoke, right? Otherwise the nurse would be able to run boilers at home, right? The gas boilers at home or gas hobs. So actually I think in this metaphor is that if there is a lot of smoke, it's not clean. You're not burning the right kind of fuel. It's actually toxic. So,
and it's not burning properly too, because the thing that I've noticed, because being burning all this stuff, I'm like, oh, there's all these different sorts of smoke. There's the smoke that just starts initially from doing, you know, like lay handyman sort of stuff about how to make a fire pit where you drill holes to let more oxygen in, all the stuff that, you know, look up on YouTube, things like that too. Seeing that firsthand and seeing when there's more oxygen come into the drum and it starts to burn. There's no smoke. It's just fire, and it actually eats the smoke.
Because of the right heat, right? And the heat is driven by the oxygen. So this is why this analogy is so interesting. Because if you're running a business right now, what of those three components, which one is the least? And have you got enough of each of those three? And how are you going to gain enough of those? Have you got enough heat? Are you really clear about what you're doing? Does everybody else know what you're doing? Does everybody have to tell your story? You know, that sense of purpose, the why from Simon Sinek, like the North Star, and are you burning with it? Do you actually believe it yourself? Is it something you should be doing, or is it something you deeply believe and are passionate about? Second one, fuel and money, people, like, do your people know why they're here? Do they know why they've joined your company? Are they bought into that sense of mission and purpose? Do they understand the why? Is that driving them? Because that helps, I think, on the purity, if you like, of your fuel, right? Because they're giving of their energy and time in joining you in your mission. So if you have the wrong kinds of people inside your organization, you're probably going to get some toxic smoke.
Yeah. And then what about too, because like the thing about if you're just out in the bush and you're making like a campfire, it can be like a bit of a skill, because like as soon as you start to go, and we've found this out pretty fast and we're getting better at it about how much you add on. It's like consistent. It's not just like
it's a skill, right?
Shove it's a log real on. Skill. Shove a log on. There's a guy actually that we watch called on YouTube, Primitive Technologies, and he's always making fire. And he's just this Australian guy who lives, I think, up in the Daintree or somewhere. And he's making all this. It's pretty cool. And he's like exceptionally good with the stick, makes it all from scratch. But then it's really interesting because he builds these sort of fires and he builds these homemade kilns that are ridiculously hot. But he's got a very methodical, particular manner that he adds is like different size sticks. When we're watching that too, and I remember my wife sort of saying to me how down at her grandparents' house that she used to go to when she was a little girl, and they had their fireplaces there, and they always had different sized sticks of different sort of ones in groups that they would use for particular parts of the fire. I was like the feel different specific structured that they'd know that they'd do the stuff with the little ones and some bigger ones, and they wouldn't just go, oh great, it's going, let's put a log on. No, it'll kill the fire.
So So applying this in the business context, right? You're a startup. Who are the first, you know, your first sticks? If you imagine they're your people, who are the first sticks that you want to bring into your business? Do you want to bring in the big log, or do you want to bring in those small sticks? And I went back to my first business. You have to be able to employ the right people for the right stage of your business. And then they either grow with you, or unfortunately, you might have to part ways because they can no longer, a small stick will burn out really quickly. They have to, in one sense, grow. The thing about human beings is we are remarkable in terms of our energy. Because for our working life, as long as we get enough rest, we start the next day with a full quotient of energy again that we can give to the mission, right? And that energy is what we're ultimately burning, if you like, as part of the fuel. But if you're a small business and you think, gosh, if we had, like, can you imagine you getting the VP of Google, right? The VP of marketing at Google, right? And he's going to come and join our small marketing agency. And it's just going to be fabulous. It's the equivalent of getting a big log and a little matchstick, right? It's not going to work. It's not going to work because it's different. In 10 years' time, you might be able to be at the right size of fire.
Smothering. To have the VP. Has a smothering effect. Perhaps
it's wrong in every wrong on every level. A small matchstick cannot set fire to a big log. That's why you have to have the tinder, and you build up, as you say, in different size of sticks.
Yeah,
and it's the same as you're growing a business. You can't. We all think, oh gosh, if we went and got the top person in this industry and joined us, no, it'd destroy your fire.
Yeah, and then it's also the amount of oxygen then too. I mean, all these things are fantastic metaphors and. And once again, just returning to that particular channel, this guy's particularly good. And I've never really seen anyone online do it, but he's doing it all the time in these videos. And he's like very, very, very gentle. He does, you know, he has a little spark, and then he's like super gentle with the tinder, like such a tiny amount of oxygen, just a blowing very gently, very gently, then a little bit more. Then all of a sudden it goes, but he's got everything set up, ready to go with all the little sticks and then some of the, and it's always
that exactly
quite the art.
It's totally, that is the analogy to think about when you're starting a business. That exact analogy, because you've got to figure out how much energy over time you expend, right? Which is the rubbing of the stick. You have to have the right amount of tinder at the bottom. You have to have the right amount of oxygen. You're just blowing on it, not too hard, not too soft. And I'm going to come back to the delusional confidence piece, right? Because you've never done it before, like you've never started a fire before, and you say to everybody, by the way, I'm going to start a fire and it's going to be huge, it's going to be massive, it's going to change the world. Oh dear God, really? Go
it's
away.
Hard, like, it's hard to start a fire from scratch. We've been trying to do it, and that's not without the sticks, with a little bit of tinder. And I had, when we were trying to do it just for fun, it was like, I want to know how to do that because that would be great. That's damn hard. It's really hard. I had like a really bloody hard. And I had like a really newfound respect for. You know, when you hear about people in the you know, Napoleonic era, and they've got their tinder boxes and stuff, and they just like whip it out and they just like, they start a fire. I was like, man, that's like a serious skill level that they obviously do all the time. But you know, it's quite remarkable. But you know, it's once again, it's a great metaphor because it sort of represents, like, as we're talking, I'm sort of thinking about how that relates to the things that I felt at a certain point I was like pretty good at, and then I went to a different level or have a different experience that like when we bought another business to sort of expand our business, and that experience made me go, wow, I'm not the expert I thought I was, you know, in a range of different areas. But then, you know, after the distress and sort of horror of that realization, you know, then going, wow, I feel great that now there's this whole other world. But it's like these different levels, like you're adding this other stick, and initially you just can't light it. It's just really, you don't know how to light it even. It seems almost impossible. Then something happens and you go, oh, right, I see. Okay. It's like, I remember one time too, it's kind of ties in, you know, to what we're talking about. I used to do a lot of martial arts and learning how to kick. And I remember my instructor at one point showing us how to do some of the more fancy kicks, like a spinning heel kick. And it's really difficult to do. I mean, you haven't done it before, so yeah, okay, I'll get to that at some future point. It's like, no, we're going to break it down, turn around, do this, do it. And eventually, and I actually specifically remember the night at our club when it just clicked, when I was doing the same thing, and I was going, it doesn't feel like Bruce Lee, obviously. It feels terrible. It feels like nothing. And then it just happened and it flew. I was like, oh my gosh, that feels strong and it feels fluid. And then I just got, but it was just this last little, just like the last stick or the point at which you light it and it actually ignites. It was like this point where I was going, oh, I get it. I get how the movement goes in order for it to feel right and powerful. And it's like these little epiphanies, like we were talking about before, they just sort of happen over time here and there. And it's kind of the, is it almost like a leveling up kind of mechanism where, you know, in these little bite sized bits where you go, it's not always just, sometimes
you have to be
sure you have a bigger one.
Well, we have to be open to it as well, right? We have to be open to putting ourselves into situations where we have no idea what we're doing. And then we recognize that actually this is a learning opportunity because I have no idea what I'm doing, and being open to the learning, because it's only highlighting what we don't know, which can feel deeply uncomfortable. And you could argue again, it's an aspect of the refiner's fire in terms of removing the dross, like the stuff that you don't need anymore, but you don't know what you do have. And you're going through that process. And you have kind of a growth mindset. You're open to learning. You're open to putting yourself into a situation which is actually really uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable to go, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. Have I made the wrong decision? Can I actually do this? Why did I do this? This was insanity.
Especially when you've gone a long way down some path.
Yes.
It's going to be hard to turn around and go back.
Yes.
And there's no side roads here. You know, so it's more sensible to keep going.
Yeah, I think all of us have known that exact moment many times. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Because you can't see the future, right? You can picture the future, but once you've been going down that dark road and you're a number of years in and there's no turn off and you seem to be running out of petrol, right? You're running out of fuel, you seem to be running out of oxygen and your own heat is starting to ebb. Oh my God, what do I do? You know? Yeah, totally.
I guess that's part of that is why I brought up the word faith before, not because of any religious thing, but it's a word that in recent times I've actually thought is just a good, really appropriate word for things we've been thinking about personally and in business, because it's the faith to when there's a certain amount of things you don't know, but you have the ability and like the faith that, but the faith then to move forward because you know it's going to work out, and you have to have that. And that's not something, it's a sort of, I guess for me, it's kind of what I touched on sort of earlier about where that sort of emotion and intellect meet, because those two things sort of still go hand in hand. You've got to go, I've got faith that this project that, it might be just like a building project, and this relates to something that we're doing right now. We've got X amount of things to do and we've got a very clear plan, but we don't have some of the money, and there's an element of faith moving forward that that's going to happen. But there's a lot of evidence to show that that will happen because it's happened in the past. So, I mean, there's an intellectual aspect to that where we know, you know, it's comforting. You go, well, it's happened in the past, so it's very likely that it's going to happen again. But there's still an element of faith there that and risk sort of linked with that, that risk go and your intellect going, but what if something goes wrong? You go, but it's not really going to because it hasn't happened in the past. It's unlikely. So the faith is able to, faith that it's going to be all right,
I think, drives you forward. Yeah. I think in a sense that faith, belief aspect is also an aspect of actualization, actually, as I'm hearing you speak, because you can apply that to anything, right? I want to build muscle. I want to get fit. I want to start a business. I want to grow a business. I want to build a house. I want to, whatever it is. I want to go on a world trip, whatever it is. It's like, well, if I don't have everything that I need in this moment, I don't have the money. I don't have the time. I don't have the skills, whatever it is. I think what's interesting in that part is actually, can you even visualize it? Can you see it? Because I think if you can see it in your mind's eye.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a big deal. And I mean, if I was going to say anything that I think, I'm talking about my wife and I, like how when we're talking about things, but because we both do creative things and we both, you know, like storytelling, and we can very easily imagine, maybe too much so sometimes. There's a lot of imagination. There's like way too much imagination going on. We got no problem, no shortage of good ideas. There's a billion of them.
Right.
But it can be very confusing sometimes and be very problematic sometimes. But one thing that we were talking about recently, which was, it's comforting and funny too, in that you reflect on it and you go, oh, such idiots, you know, talking about these things so like over and over again. But about the idea that that like you just, there's the frustration and risk and going, is it going to work out? Yes, it will. No. What about this idea? Oh, but this one's good too. What should we do? Blah, blah, blah. But then ultimately just going, let's just try as best as we can to embrace the fact that and accept that there's X amount of things we don't know. And that sounds a bit sort of, I guess, loose and, you know, non-specific. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that that's been really helpful in us anyway, when our minds are all over the shop and we go, we've got this particular plan. And we're doing it, and we know there's a bunch of stuff that is going to be really difficult. But you know, let's just accept that and move on. And also, we know we're probably going to have the same conversation again tomorrow, and go. Oh my God, and I go, and then remind ourselves, but that's okay too. Like it's the sort of ebb and flow. Of, you know, it's okay that it's not all, you know, all one sort of thing. There's this constant flow
I think in that setting, it can be really helpful to actually step back, because when you're in the detail of something, which is what you're describing there, you're in the detail. You're in like, you're at the coal face, you're underground, you're opal mining, gold mining. Well, like you're underground, like you just see the detail that's in front of you and it becomes overwhelming. You get in a helicopter. You go up to where I'm playing, you go up to 30,000 feet. It's like, okay, I remember. This is what we're trying to achieve, right? The big picture stuff. This is what we're trying to achieve. Okay, now we can go back into the detail. This particular decision doesn't really matter, right? It's the decisions over a week, over a month, over a year. It's life's an adventure. Like you can't get every little thing right. But if you come up to that 30,000 foot view, right? Where the jet planes fly and you look down, gosh, you get a different perspective. So if you keep coming back to ultimately, what is it we're trying to achieve here? And is what we're doing right now helping us achieve that? You can argue about which path you take to go up a mountain, but ultimately we want to get to the top of the mountain. Like, you know, you're going to be boulders and ravines and crevasses and you might sprain your ankle. You might fall. You might get hungry. It might get dark. You might run out of water, but still going to the top of the mountain.
Yeah. I think there's also the assumption too, and I like this particular idea. There's this assumption that there's only one right way up, that there's only just the one.
Well, that's the one thing that continually messes us up.
Yeah.
We think we're right. We think there is only one way.
Multiple, because one, to me, when I think about that, that's completely illogical. You either go, okay, well, this was always inevitable, which in one sense is true because it is what is actually happening. So it is because it's what has happened and what led to this point. So that is true. But it's also that, you know, what if this happened is also kind of nice to think about, but at the same time, irrelevant. But
yeah,
then
this current moment doesn't define my life.
No, but if you do insist, like I and we do often, is go insist on reflecting and going, what if this had happened and this could have been like this? Often when I think about that, like there is always a part where it's like, nah, that just wouldn't have worked out. And that was really obvious that was the case. But there was a lot of ones like, nah, that would have been cool too. And actually that would have also been good. But what we've got now, we genuinely think is actually better. So it doesn't mean the other one was crap or no good. It just means that one, you know, maybe there's a part of like, yeah, the other thing would have been good. Plus also the fact that we're just so happy that we got here that we're thankful for whatever we've got. So, right. So that's why it seems then even better. And it actually is, but it's because you're, you know, just kind of grateful that you got here at the end of the trip, you know, like, you know, you got at the end of the trip and you're just like, man, that was like pretty interesting. And there was some pretty hard bits, but it's like I always find, say, when I've just returned to something like, you know, sport or squash, I've had this conversation with other squash mates too. And I always find I never have, even if I, you know, win or if I have some really satisfying game, I never have almost any satisfaction about that fact at the end of the game. It's never like after the game, I'm not like, whoa, that's amazing. I'm like having some great, like, you know, sort of happy experience. It's always during, it's all the little moments during the game that are like, that was an amazing point. Like that was like really exciting. They're the moments that are really like get your sort of heart pumping and get your, you know, someone does some crazy shot and there's a really tough moment and it's very stressful and that's really exciting. And then at the end, it's like nothing. It's like, and I've had the same, and I thought, oh, maybe that's just me, but I've talked to other mates and they're like, yeah, that's pretty much it. That's like, that's how it's, and that's like the metaphor for, you know, this sort of journey, all these little moments, and obviously through a business too. And, but I just like, as we're moving towards the tail end, I guess, of the podcast and too, Mark, I just wanted to also, get your, I guess maybe your definition or your interpretation of the use of the word disruptive, of how you think of that. Cause I know like a lot of people, it's a very widely used term these days. People are using it like very loosely all the time. And I know it's like, it's probably very easy for a lot of people to, you know, bandy it around in a way that might just be not for any particular meaningful.
Totally. I really wrestled with the title of the book for that reason, because it can be seen as a positive or a negative.
Sure. Right?
My working definition of the word disruptive or disruption is to successfully challenge the status quo. If you're wanting to start a business, you're launching a new product, launching a new service, you want to make a difference. The very act of making a difference is challenging the status quo, i.e. you are disrupting the way things are and you're pursuing a difference that you want to make. So it's the difference between what is right now and the difference that you perceive in the future at some point. That journey is disruptive. It, by definition, it is disruptive. So, and so I talk about purposeful positive disruption rather than negative destructive disruption. A wildfire, a flash fire. You do not want a flash fire in your kitchen, right? Because it's destructive. You don't want that. What you do want though, if you have a gas hob, is that when you turn that thing and you switch it on to heat your pan, that's positive disruption. You're wanting to heat the water in your pan to cook something.
Or a nice wood oven or something.
Oh yeah. So disruption is positive or negative, and most leaders are positive or negative, or somewhere in between on a scale. And this is why I talk about quality leadership, because if I'm starting a business, why am I doing it? And do I want to make a positive impact? And how do I define what is positive versus for ego, status, power, which potentially is destructive?
Yeah. I feel like, because I haven't sent out any surveys about how people view the word disruptive, but I feel sort of intuitively like people have it like a bit of a synonym with sort of anarchy, or, you know, or things that are anarchic. And
but they are, right?
Yeah,
it is.
But it's then maybe it's like a misinterpretation even of that concept.
It's
too,
the negative connotation of, yes.
Yeah, it means
if you're wanting to build a house, you have to cause
destruction.
Totally. If you want to build a house on a new plot, it's going to cause anarchy for whatever was there before. If you're wanting to start a business and ultimately take market share from a competitor, that's anarchy to the competitor. They don't want you to do that. That's a very negative thing for the competitor, but you're trying to do something positive.
Yeah.
So,
I guess. Yeah, sorry. No, I was just going to say, I just had this funny image that the bushfire on my property was like a disruptive startup, you know, that was.
Well, that good just, can always come out of bad, right? Always.
Yeah. Well, he or she, you know, came onto our property, had a great idea, started it up, went out of control, and another more structured one, the backburning came along and stopped it and took market share.
Well, exactly. You know, Shakespeare talks about, probably gonna get the quote wrong now, but basically you fight fire with fire. A wildfire ultimately is one that's not planned, versus a backfire, which is one that is planned, and the backfire is designed to stop the wildfire, right?
Yeah.
So if you have a business and you're being attacked, there's a wildfire that's now attacking you. How do you deal with that to protect your business? Yeah. These are all. Yeah.
Yeah. You remove the fuel. But so we spoke about at the start of the podcast, Mark, that you would be so kind as to share some sort of quote with it. It's a little thing that I do always on the podcast. And now it's your turn, Mark.
I'm going to go with the quote I think I used at the outset, because I think there's great power in it, which is, you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one. It's very appropriate. And we've covered like a lot of things actually, but have you got any, I guess, or on a parting note, any last kind of words or things you'd like to sort of say to people listening?
Number one, if you've heard anything you like, please do buy my book. it's on Amazon, Disruptive Leadership Using Fire to Drive Purposeful Change by me, Mark Bateman. You know, when I was preparing for this, you know, I was trying to think, your listeners, you're listening to this now, you've heard a lot, but you know, you're trying to make a difference. You're absolutely trying to make a difference. And that difference is worthwhile. And, you know, if I was speaking to you personally, I'd say you can do it. Keep believing in yourself. Keep investing in yourself. Don't be afraid of the bits you're unaware of. And see if you can see if you can even write down the difference that you want to make.
Yeah. At least make a start. Hey. Yeah.
The book will take you through a bit of that journey as well. Okay, here's an interesting one, right? You ready for this one?
Yep.
And it's one that I ask a lot of my coaches, the leaders I work with, to do. Oh, it sounds a bit macabre, but it's not. I want you to imagine the end of your life and somebody writes your obituary. What is it you'd want them to write?
Should I answer that?
It's probably something you need to think about.
It probably is. I've never thought of that before.
No, but I tell you what, you spend, it'll take you probably a few hours to do.
Or maybe
to really think through.
Yeah, it's this is probably not it, but the first thing that popped into my head would be very short. It would be he tried.
He was a trier.
He tried.
See, that's not, but that's not it though, is it? You don't want to go through the annals of history, you know, Saul, he tried, bless him. You know, it's the thing about sitting down, like imagine you're going to write 300 or 500 words or something, right? What's important to you? How is it you want other people to remember you? What is the legacy or the impact of your time on this planet? And you'll think personally, you'll think family, you'll think friends, you'll think your work, you'll think it's like this rainbow of aspects of our lives.
Mm.
What is really, truly important to us? What is the mark that we want to leave? And I think doing that exercise can help us get clearer about today, what's important to us today. And it is, it's kind of taking that 30,000 foot view again, but from the perspective of our whole lives, you know, because it's not going to be much longer and we're not going to be here. So kind of make every day count.
The other one might be, to learn more, click here, and it goes to a website that explains it really well.
To learn more, click here. Well, that's what you would want. Yeah.
But they actually go to a great website that explains it really well. It's way better than an average obituary. Anyway, all jokes aside, but actually that's not a bad idea. That might be the best thing, or a really good motion graphic or video. But what's the best way, Mark, for people to actually find out about your book and you online? We'll have links also to this in the description too, but where do they go online?
Thank you. So I have a personal website, mark-bateman.com. I'm the CEO at WeQual, so if you're interested in the gender equality aspect, that's WeQual.com, WEQUAL. The best place to probably follow me is on LinkedIn. Those are probably the three best ways.
Great. Thanks, Mark. It was a great conversation. Really, really interesting. I have a lot of real gems in there, so to speak, especially the gold bit. That was good.
Especially the gold bit.
Yeah, especially the gold bit. That was the biggest gem. And thank you, and really appreciate your time. And likewise. That's it for today, everyone, yet again. Thanks so much for listening in to our little podcast. And we will see you again soon. Say goodbye, Mark.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business podcast.